Could a character be good at both melee and ranged damage in Baldur's Gate 3? And not just good, how about amazing? With the right build and the right equipment, I think they could. And I'm talking incredible burst and sustained damage from both ranged and melee. And honestly, I think it's the best damn build in the entire game. So let's talk about how to make it. Welcome to D4. Hey everybody, so here at D4, each week I take a deep dive into character builds for my favorite role-playing games. I like to crunch numbers about them, theorycraft about them, not so that I can tell you the right way or the best way to play a character. Maybe I'm making an exception to that rule, actually, this week. But generally, just to explore one potential way to build something in the hopes of creating a character that's both really powerful, but also really fun to play. So if you enjoy creating characters for your favorite role-playing games almost as much as you enjoy playing the actual game itself, or if you're just looking for tips or ideas on how to build something that you're thinking about playing, then welcome home. This is where you belong. And I'm so glad you're here. So thank you for watching. My name's Colby. I put these build videos out every Tuesday, so if you like what you see, I would appreciate it if you'd consider joining the channel as a member. There's a little button down there that says join. Click on it and it will tell you kind of the different perks that you can get as a channel member, including, but not limited to, access to the library of write-ups that I create for each of these builds to help you recreate the character yourself a little more easily, access to the D4 Discord server, which is filled with a ton of wonderful, amazing, friendly people, making it a great hangout space, and even access to the live Q&A hangout sessions that we do each month. A huge shout out and thank you to my channel members. I could not do this without you guys. You are amazing. And everybody else, you are also amazing. If you don't want to join or can't, that's okay. Just being here, watching, liking, subscribing, clicking the notifications bell, these are all great ways to support the channel, so thank you. Right, so a few weeks ago, I beat the game in honor mode in BG3. I recorded myself doing so, actually. Watch it here if you're interested. One thing that I kind of realized as I was thinking about the results of that final fight, especially, people just don't talk about Divine Smite as much as they should. I don't know. I keep seeing all of these builds by other YouTubers, and maybe I'm just not watching the right channels or something, but I feel like very few people build around Divine Smite, and I can't quite figure out why. Sure, there are lots of potent builds out there that don't use the ability, right? I've made a dozen videos going over, 25 or 30 of my favorites. Check out the playlist here if you haven't seen it. Most of those don't use Divine Smite, and there are plenty more builds that I have yet to explore, which is one reason why I love this game so dang much. But yeah, I don't think Divine Smite's getting as much love in the BG3 zeitgeist as it should. The thing is, as I've often tried to emphasize on this channel, in combat, in D&D, and especially in BG3, I think, where we can sort of take short and long rests almost anytime we want to, burst damage is king, or queen, or whatever. And this is especially true in honor mode, when we're often facing down a really tough boss that has some punishing legendary actions, and we need to try to blow them up as quickly as we possibly can. And as far as I'm concerned, when it comes to burst or Nova damage, no feature in the game beats Divine Smite. Why do I say that? What makes it so good? First of all, it can potentially just add a ton of damage on demand every time you hit an enemy, so long as you've got the spell slots to burn anyways. But, I mean, something that's maybe especially powerful in BG3, when you get a critical hit, the damage from Divine Smite is doubled, along with everything else that's being doubled, right? And there are a lot of ways in this game to increase your crit chance and even give you some on-demand critical hits as well once in a while when you need them, though those do tend to be limited in use. I mean, when I beat honor mode, my Tav was mostly a swords bard, but not a ranged bard or a killer bard like what I built in this video here, but instead was like a melee gishy swords bard, right? With paladin levels for Divine Smite, as well as a few other classes for reasons that I won't get into at the moment. And yeah, like in that final fight, I almost took out both the Red Dragon and later the Netherbrain with just that character in a single round each. I mean, I didn't quite kill him, but I think I got him down to like 20-25% health just on my Tav's first round of combat against them. And I wasn't even doing it right, actually. I was nervous to be both on the final fight in honor mode and recording, so cut me some slack, okay. I had misjudged how many Cloud Giant potions I had left, so I didn't have one of those. I totally forgot to make use of my Bardic Flourishes, so yeah, lots of mistakes were made. Anyways, the point is, it was a super solid build, and I said at the time that I'd try to do a video on the build, so today is the day that I do that. And yes, for the record, I do think that this would be a fantastic build to solo honor mode with, and in fact, I think I'd probably argue that this is the best build in the world to try and solo honor mode with. And I'm okay if you want to disagree with me on that, but it is a claim that I'm willing to make. That said, I am going to tweak the build slightly today, at least once we get to level 9 or so, compared to what I originally played, to have more paladin levels, which I think is particularly important if you're trying to solo the game, but I'll talk about that more when I get there. And so, I proudly present BG3 episode number 13, lucky number 13, the best damn build in the game. So cocky. But first, I am super excited to tell you guys about a brand new sponsor today, Scoundrel Game Lab's Xander's Guide to Zombie Hunting, which just launched on Kickstarter today at the time of this video release. So exciting. A lot of you are already familiar with Scoundrel Game Labs. They've put out a ton of other awesome 5e compatible content in the past, like the Festival of Tombs, the Griselda books, Griselda's Guide to Ghost Hunting, Griselda's Curiosities, etc. These guys have a fantastic track record of creating great stuff to augment your campaign, and Xander's Guide to Zombie Hunting is no different. So, if you love zombies and or apocalyptic survival settings and want to introduce a little more of those things into your D&D campaign, then this is the book for you. Not only is this book going to include a ton of new spells and magic items and monsters all centered around the zombie survival apocalypse theme, but my favorite thing about the book, as always really, is the new player character options that they're going to be introducing, and there are a ton of those, including, but not limited to, 12 new subclasses, like the Barbarian Path of the Hidewalker, which essentially lets you skin your fallen foes to disguise yourself as an undead, right? So macabre. Doing so will let you take on undead-like powers yourself, as well as exert a little bit of control over the undead too. So cool. Or there's the wizard subclass, the Necrotic Flesh Graft Arcane Tradition, which lets you actually replace parts of your own body with undead flesh, thereby gaining some warlock powers, interestingly, but that use intelligence instead of charisma. That could be fun to build around. As well as learn additional necromancy or transmutation spells, drain life, and more. But there is more than just new subclasses. There's a new lineage akin to the already existing like Dampiers or Hexbloods, right? This is called the Bitten, which is essentially someone that's been bitten by a zombie but hasn't turned yet. Sounds cool. And even an entirely new class, the Animist, which is a spellcasting class that mixes arcane magic and alchemy to bring their minions to life, with each subclass focusing on quickening and empowering a different type of companion, zombies or ghosts or even constructs. Summoners of the world, rejoice. So, don't delay. Go check out the Kickstarter now and give them your support. I'll put a link in the video description, of course, on how to do so. Sign up now and get all the goodies that you can only get by backing them before they go to press, right? Because this thing will absolutely get funded at several times over their funding goal. I'm 100% confident of that. So go make your apocalyptic dreams come true. Big thanks to Scoundrel Game Labs. Can't wait to see the finished product here. And let's get back to the build. At level 1, we are going to start off the build as a bard for our starting class, but I think you could make a very strong argument for starting paladin instead. Paladins are going to be better generally defensively, with more hit points, heavy armor proficiency. They're also going to get some nice burst damage capability via Divine Smite, as we've discussed, and of course, some really great self-healing thanks to Lay on Hands that don't eat up our spell slots, among other things. That said, especially if we're going to play this character as a solo character, I think bards are just better all-rounders, with much better utility, and once they hit level 3 at least, some decent burst damage capabilities of their own, as well as self-heals and control options, thanks to spells, that will outpace what paladins can do. As for our starting race, I don't usually recommend a race for BG3 anyways, but if you are going to start off as a bard and you're planning on soloing especially, I think Githyanki is probably the strongest pick as your race. It's not a must-have, especially once we get a few levels under our belt, but Githyankis get medium armor proficiency, which we wouldn't have on this character, at least until level 3. They get some nice weapon proficiencies and some nice once-per-long-rest spells, most importantly Misty Step, which bards don't get access to until Magical Secrets. You can make other races work just fine here, but I think this does make our early game especially a little bit easier. As for our ability scores, I'm going to say let's start off here with a 16 Dexterity, a 16 Constitution, and a 14 Charisma. We will be respecking a few times, of course. It's me we're talking about here. But yeah, Dex is going to be our most important damage stat for a while. Constitution, I mean, everybody needs that. We like surviving. And the 14 Charisma, you could actually swap the Constitution and the Charisma scores here. I think you'd be fine, especially if you wanted like better persuasion checks and bard spell checks, right? But I'd probably prioritize survival if I was trying to solo honor mode. As for the equipment that we're going to want in this character, eventually at least we're going to want to get to 2 hand crossbows and or 2 short swords and then the best medium armor we can get. So yes, in case you'd forgotten or never knew, in Baldur's Gate 3 you can dual wield hand crossbows, and unlike in D&D, you don't need a free hand to reload them or anything. So yeah, that means just like any other single-handed light weapon, which hand crossbows are, if we have one in each hand, we can use our bonus action to fire the one in our offhand every round, right? The only difference being that if we don't have the two-weapon fighting style, we don't get to add our dexterity modifier to the damage from the offhand weapon. Not a big deal, something that we're going to be remedying before too long, so yes, for the first several levels, at least, I am suggesting that we go with the ranged, like, killer bard approach. You certainly don't have to. You could dual-wield short swords here and make it work, but staying at a ranged distance while being able to burst down important targets makes this the safer choice for sure until, like I say, we get a few levels under our belt and move to be more melee focused, probably somewhere in Act 2. As a Bard 1 then, we get Bardic Inspiration, which lets us, as a bonus action, add a d6 to an ally's attack, ability check, or saving throw of their choice, but of course, if we're soloing, we don't really have anyone to give those inspirations to at the moment. Dang it. They reset on a long rest for now. And then we also get Bard spells, right? I'd probably go with the Bard usuals here. Vicious Mockery is just really fun and funny more than anything. Insulting your enemies with some fantastic insults to do a little damage and impose disadvantage on their next attack. Healing Words, great ranged bonus action heal. Tasha's Hideous Laughter is really nice single target control. And I'd probably grab Fairy Fire to give advantage against potentially multiple targets. The other one I'd consider using here though is Bane. It's sort of the anti-bless, right? Debuffing your enemies with a minus d4 to all of their attacks and saves if they fail their initial saving throw against the spell. And yeah, considering that it's a charisma saving throw to avoid Bane, as opposed to dexterity for Fairy Fire, enemies are generally more likely to fail against Bane than they would Fairy Fire, so I'd strongly consider using it. At level 2, we get Jack of All Trades, which lets us add half of our proficiency bonus when making a skill check that we are not proficient in. Really nice for a solo character, especially. And then Song of Rest, which essentially just gives us one more short rest per day. Handy. At level 3, we get Expertise, and that lets us double our proficiency bonus in 2 skills that we're proficient in. I would 100% personally here take Perception and Sleight of Hand. Perception is super important, especially if you're the only one in the party, right? Helping to make sure that you see those traps before you trigger them, as well as other important little things in the game like dirt mounds or hidden buttons, etc. And then, yeah, Sleight of Hand is going to help us be good at disarming those traps, not to mention picking locks. Astarion's back at camp, dude. We gotta do this ourselves, and honestly, Expertise is one of the main reasons that I decided to start Bard with this build instead of Paladin. Combined with Jack of All Trades, we're just way better at everything outside of combat than pretty much any other class, and that is especially important when we have only ourselves to rely on, right? We also get second level Bard spells here, and there are a lot of great options. Cloud of Daggers gives us some nice persistent damage with our concentration. Hold Person to potentially paralyze a humanoid, a very punishing condition to inflict on an enemy. Lesser Restoration, of course, is a nice potential support option. Go ahead and pick your favorites here. But then we get our Bard College, our subclass, and as I've said, yeah, we're going Swords Bard. And the more I play this game, the more I kind of feel like Bards, and maybe especially Swords Bards, are like the best overall class and subclass that the game has to offer. They have so much versatility, so much utility, great support options, and thanks to one feature in particular that's a little broken for Swords Bards, really fantastic damage as well. Now, as a Swords Bard, we get medium armor and scimitar proficiency in case we didn't start Githyanki and in case we find a really great scimitar. And then, yes, we get the probably overpowered, in this game at least, blade flourishes. Now, those of us flying solo finally have a use of our inspirations. These flourishes let us spend a use of our bardic inspiration to enhance our weapon attacks in one of three ways. Defensive flourish makes a weapon attack that, if it hits, both adds your bardic inspiration die in damage and then increases your armor class by 4 until your next turn, almost as good as the shield spell. Mobile flourish pushes your target a massive 20 feet away if it hits. That's awesome. And then it also lets you teleport to them after the push without spending a reaction or a bonus action or anything. Really fantastic mobility there. Slashing Flourish, though, is the really broken one. It just straight up lets you make 2 attacks. In melee, it kind of gives you a little AoE like arc cleave, right? Where you're basically making an attack against 2 enemies that are basically standing next to each other. If you're using a ranged weapon, though, you just get to make 2 attacks against whoever is in range of your ranged weapon, including against the same enemy if we want. So right now, with a single attack, we can make 2 attacks against our primary target with our action, and each of them add a d6 in damage from our bardic inspiration die. Then we'd make a 3rd attack with our bonus action offhand if we have 2-hand crossbows, right? And yeah, 3 attacks with some damage bonuses this early in the game at round 3 is really strong. Swords Bards also get a fighting style here, and yeah, we're going to take the 2-weapon fighting style, which lets us add our dexterity modifier to our offhand attack now as well. Whether we're using 2-hand crossbows, or sure, if we wanted to go melee and we were doing like 2 short swords or scimitars, works either way. It's very nice. At level 4, we get our first feat, and of course, for now anyways, we are going to go sharpshooter here. We will be respecking away from it eventually, but yeah, it's sort of a no-brainer at this point. One of the best feats in game, it lets us add 10 flat damage to our ranged weapon attacks at the cost of a -5 penalty to hit, and unless you're going up against a really hard to hit enemy, it's almost always worth using. That said, it's a little bit less awesome when flying solo. We don't have anyone to be casting Bless on us at the moment, making Fairy Fire a little more important than it used to be, right? We really want advantage at this point in the game with as few plus to hit bonuses as we probably have right now. So here's hoping that your most important enemies fail their dexterity saving throw against Fairy Fire when you really need them to. Level 5 is such an important level for us, primarily because of all of the great benefits we get to our Bardic Inspiration. Improved Bardic Inspiration bumps our Inspiration die to a d8, and also gives us one more use of it, but even better is Font of Inspiration, which causes those inspirations to reset on a short rest instead of a long rest, so now we are just going to be annihilating our enemies from far away pretty much every encounter. Assuming that we're taking a short rest after each anyways, right? We'll have 4 flourishes to really front load damage for us, and it's pretty devastating. We also get 3rd level bard spells here, so sure, Fear or Hypnotic Pattern are probably the strongest choices to lay down some crazy serious control, while you focus on those who succeeded on their save against the spell. Hopefully there's only 1 or 2 of them. At level 6, we finally get extra attack as a Swords Bard, and yeah, that means that with Slashing Flourish and our bonus action, we'd potentially be making 5 attacks against our enemies. All of them with that extra 10 flat damage from Sharpshooter, and most of them with an extra d8 from our Inspiration die. But at level 7, I think it's time for a little multiclassing here. I'm going to take actually a single level dip in Wizard first. I would never do this in D&D for a variety of reasons, but in BG3, as we've discussed before and as you probably know, with just a single level in Wizard, you can learn any Wizard spell that you have spell slots for from a wizard spell scroll, giving you access to that spell permanently. At this level, we'd have 4th level spell slots, right? And that means not only could we learn the shield spell as a wizard 1, right, which will be super important for our survivability, letting us use a reaction to increase our AC by 5 for a round when we get hit, and actually you could stack that with a defensive flourish for a +9. I don't know that you'd ever need it, but anyways. But we could also learn the Misty Step spell from a scroll for some on-demand teleportation, more than just once per long rest, right? If we went Githyanki. And most importantly, I think, the haste spell, if we can find a scroll of haste, anyways. And yeah, I still think haste is probably the best buff in the game, even after Larian nerfed it to be slightly more in line with the D&D version. It just flat out gives you an entire second action every single round, so long as you can hold on to concentration, right? Though, if we use that action to attack, we only get a single attack, not two from extra attack, at least if we're playing in Tactician or Honor mode. We could use that second action to cast a spell though, which is cool. And yeah, I mean, we have Slashing Flourish, right? So even a single weapon attack is equivalent to two more attacks for us, right? So very, very solid. And of course, Haste also increases our armor class and our dexterity saves by two and doubles our move speed. It's just a really strong spell. At Wizard 1, we also get Arcane Recovery, which lets us recover, at this level, a first level spell slot once per day, so one more casting of the shield spell in all likelihood. I'm not complaining. At level 8, I would take our first level in Paladin now, but I think I'd actually respec so that we would be a Paladin 1, right? Paladin first. Doing so would give us heavy armor proficiency, which just means more survivability, and that's a very good thing. We're probably running into some pretty decent heavy armor by this point, right? So it'll be nice to be able to equip it. We also get martial weapon proficiency, so now we can use all weapons, regardless of their type. At this level, that might mean ditching hand crossbows if you've got a really good longbow or short bow or heavy crossbow or something, right? That bonus action offhand attack is nice from the hand crossbow, but it might be worth swapping it out if we've got a really strong two-handed bow, right? And then we get our Oath, our subclass. In BG3, Pallies get their subclass right at level 1, and I'm gonna say we ought to go Vengeance here. It's not necessarily a must-have, but it's definitely my favorite of the three options for sure. At this level, that just gives us Inquisitor's Might, which lets us use our Channel Divinity charge, something that resets on a short rest, and a bonus action to give our weapon attacks extra radiant damage equal to our Charisma modifier for a couple of rounds. Those attacks can also potentially daze enemies, a unique to BG3 condition that gives them disadvantage on wisdom saves, prevents reactions, and causes them to lose their dexterity modifier to their armor class. This isn't an amazing feature, but you know, I'd probably only use it if I had nothing else better to do with my bonus action, but yeah, maybe you've got an amazing two-handed bow, and now you can buff yourself with it and then throw out a bunch of attacks right on round one, get a little extra damage out of all of them, and potentially daze some enemies while you're at it. At Pally 1, we also get Divine Sense. It's kind of in a similar category here. In BG3, it lets us use our bonus action to give ourselves advantage on attacks against Celestials, Fiends, and Undead. It only lasts two turns, but yeah, against those kinds of enemies would be worth using your bonus action for. This also resets on a short rest. We also get Lay on Hands here, and this is an always useful ability that basically heals or cures poison or disease with an action. We have a few limited charges of it per day, but hey, free heals that don't cost a spell slot, nice. At level 9, we would be a Paladin 2, and that means we get a fighting style, and in anticipation of moving into a more melee focus, I'd probably go Great Weapon fighting style here. Not definitely though, probably. The fighting style is a lot better in BG3 than D&D in that it lets us reroll the damage die if we get a 1 or a 2 on the damage die roll when making an attack with a weapon that we've got in two hands, right? But in BG3, it will reroll not just the weapon's damage, it will also reroll any dice for damage from, say, Divine Smite, for example, or a Bardic Flourish. So yeah, it's a lot better. It's still not amazing though, so taking defense instead to raise our armor class by 1 would not be a bad choice either. As for Paladin spells that we get here, I'd probably grab Cure Wounds for some more healing options, Command maybe for a like non-concentration one round of control option to make a target flee or come back to you or fall prone or like drop what it's holding. It's super situational since it takes our action, but if we're hasted, we could use that extra haste for Command here. I can see that being useful sometimes. The most important pickup here though is probably Bless. Yes, still one of the best buffs in game. It adds a D4 to all of our attacks and saving throws, and though it might not be better than haste, it's still worth having, especially if we find ourselves in a fight where we don't have the spell slot to cast haste on ourselves, and or if we're up against particularly hard to hit enemies, and also because there will be times that you're going to want to cast it on yourself when you're in like a conversation, right, with someone and you're needing to make a saving throw as a result of something that's going on in the dialogue, right? So yeah. Keep Bless handy. But above all, we are thrilled about Pally 2 because it means that we finally get Divine Smite. We already discussed it a bit, but as a reminder, it just lets us add 2d8 of radiant damage when we hit with a melee weapon. We spend a spell slot to do so, and the damage goes up by 1d8 for every level above first level spell slot that we spend on it, right? Capping at 5d8 for a fourth level spell slot, which would be 10d8 if we crit. And that is a whole lot of damage. And so, for this reason that we finally have Divine Smite, I am going to say that we might want to respec here, or very soon, kind of around this level, to be more of a melee-focused character. When you do this is totally going to depend on your gear, and maybe most especially how many Elixirs of Giant Strength you have. For those who don't know, there's two different kinds of Elixir of Giant Strength, right? Hill Giant and Cloud Giant. They just set our strength to a flat 21 or 27, depending on which version you're using. And as all elixirs, they last all day long until you take a long rest, right? So yes, let's say you've got a really awesome two-handed weapon and you are itching to start using it. First thing we need to do is take care of the low strength score we've got, right? I mean, sure, you could actually use one of the unique finesse longswords available in the game, Falera Luve, for example, and since longswords are versatile, you could use two hands to make an attack with it, and if you had great weapon master, you'd still get that extra 10 damage from using two hands on a longsword, and then still smite without needing to worry about your strength score, just your dex. And, I mean, sure, you could continue to dual wield instead. You can smite with light weapons just as well as you can with, you know, heavy weapons. But thanks to the Great Weapon Master feat, we just get a lot more damage if we're in melee by going two-handers, right? Anyways, outside of those situations, yeah, we're gonna want to quaff an Elixir of Giant Strength to make this viable. Otherwise, we'd have to dump too many other stats to get our strength to a good place, and even then, it wouldn't be as good as I would want it to be if we're taking a -5 to hit, thanks to the Great Weapon Master feat that we'll be picking up, right? If we have enough Elixirs of Giant Strength to make this kind of usable, then it's gonna be awesome. And yeah, the alternative, I mean, right now we've got a 16 dexterity. Thanks to our multi-classing, we haven't been able to bump it yet. That's making it increasingly more difficult to hit our targets when we have sharpshooter turned on. But if we're using a Hill Giant Elixir, we're gonna have a 21 strength, which will be a +2 to hit compared to those ranged attacks. Considering that we can be smiting on top of those and still be adding flourish damage, it makes it a really appealing option for bursting down a boss in a big fight. So, needless to say, make sure that you keep an eye out for giant strength elixirs at every single vendor that you visit, as well as giant fingers so that you can craft them yourself, right? It totally would be worth Googling a good guide on where to buy both of those things and then stock up as best you can throughout your game so that you can be well supplied into the end game. At level 10, though, I would for sure be respecing now to be mostly a paladin. Here's the thing. At or around this point, we're probably in Act 3, we're getting into some of the toughest fights in the game. Up until now, we've probably been able to get by most of the fight fairly easily. That killer ranged bard build is really good, but when it comes to fights like Raphael, Ansur, you're probably going to be a little tested, maybe a lot tested. And in my experience, nothing is a bigger threat to killing our honor mode run than failing an important saving throw in a really tough fight where you might be getting mind controlled or stunned or paralyzed, to say nothing of the fact that if we lose concentration on haste, we're incapacitated for a round, right? And we, you may have noticed, don't have constitution saving throw proficiency. Using haste has been a bit of a dicey proposition up to this point. So yeah, now that we're level 10 and things are getting real, I think we respec to Pally 6, Bard 3, Wizard 1, so that we can have that almighty aura of protection and protect those saving throws. I failed a really important save in that final fight of my honor mode run, meaning I couldn't use the shield spell, and it almost cost me my life. Silenced anyways. And oh shoot, you know what? Now I cannot use shield. Being silenced. Shoot, I'm gonna take a lot of magic missile damage here. Making my saves for haste, at least. But it hurts, mama. Oh, okay, made them all. Oh,
days, so now I don't get reactions.
If I would have been playing solo, I probably would have died. So yeah, we need to shore up that glaring weakness. And for that reason, you might have even wanted to make this shift to Pally 6 sooner. Anyways, assuming that we are respecing now, yes, we want to keep a level in Wizard for access to those important spells that we don't otherwise get, and we want 3 levels of Bard for Expertise, Jack of All Trades, and the Flourishes. But let me then just quickly go over what our new Paladin levels are going to give us. First up, at Pally 3, we get Divine Health, which makes us immune to disease. Then, as a Vengeance Paladin, we get 2 new uses for our Channel Divinity. Abjure Enemy lets us use an action to try and frighten one enemy for 3 rounds, preventing them from moving, giving them disadvantage on attacks and ability checks. I'd probably never use this, for the record, as it costs an action, but maybe there's a use case for it, I suppose. But Vow of Enmity, on the other hand, I would use all the time. It costs a bonus action, which is a bummer, but it then gives us advantage against an enemy of our choice for 1 whole minute, and in those big boss fights, that's going to be huge. They don't get to save against it or anything, we just have advantage. And advantage will make us not only hit more often, but importantly, crit more often, since we get to roll 2d20s, right? Doubling our crit chance, and we really like crits on this build, especially. At Pally 4, we'd get a feat, right? And so yeah, grab Great Weapon Master here for that minus 5 to hit, but plus 10 to damage that we love. At Pally 5, we get extra attack, so we don't need it from Swords Bard, right? As well as second level Paladin spells. Vengeance Pallies, gloriously, get Misty Step for free, always handy. Plus Hold Person as well, if we want to use our concentration to try and paralyze a humanoid. I'd grab Aid as well to increase our maximum hit points and lesser restoration in case you need to cure, poison, or blinded. It also cures disease, which we don't need, and paralysis, but if we're paralyzed, we're not going to be able to use our actions to cast this spell, so yeah, doesn't do much for us there. Maybe I'll pause briefly here to kind of mention, you know, Aid. I mean, do you use that yourself, or do you have somebody back at your camp cast it on you? And what about all of those other awesome buffs that your camp followers could potentially throw on you? Is that cheating if you're trying to solo the game? I don't know. That's up to you. I don't have a problem with it. I figure if I'm flying solo, sure, give me all the help I can get. So I like to have a companion throw Warding Bond on me, right? And Long Strider and Freedom of Movement when we get there, etc. Definitely Aid at the highest level, right, etc. If you want a bigger challenge and don't ever want to take advantage of that, it feels cheesy to you, whatever, that's fine. At least you've got Aid now. Anyways, at Paladin 6, we get that amazing, incredible Aura of Protection, which increases all of our saving throws by our Charisma modifier, as well as to allies within 10 feet, right? So we're talking a plus 3 or a plus 4 at this level, and that's just huge for us. Wait a second, how would you be a plus 4, you might be asking? We never increased our charisma with a feat. You're right, we didn't. So let me talk about this now. Assuming we fought the hag way back in Act 1, but we didn't kill her, that plus 1 to an ability score that she gives you, I know it would be tempting to use it to increase dexterity, but don't do it. Use it to increase your charisma. Then you respec so that you start with a 17 charisma, letting you have an 18 at that point, right? Or a plus 4. And yeah, for that matter, in Act 3, if you go to the House of Grief, same thing. Try your darndest to get a plus 2 bump to your charisma from the mirror, right? If you do both of those things, you're going to have a 20 charisma now, or a plus 5 even, which will be wonderful, both for social interactions, sure, but also our spells, and then every single one of our saving throws. Okay, at level 11, with Aura of Protection secured, let's go back to Bard, meaning we would be a Bard 4 again. And that's going to give us a feat, right? And just like last time, I mean, sure, with this feat, we could bump charisma and that would be great. Not a bad idea at all. But we could just get Sharpshooter again. Wait, Sharpshooter and Great Weapon Master in the same freaking build? Are you crazy? Yeah, I kind of am. But honestly, I think it's the best route here. With an asterisk, right? Depending heavily on our gear, so put a pin in that thought and we'll talk about it in a second. At level 12, final level, we would be a Bard 5 again, right? And that means that we regain all of those lovely increases to our Bardic Inspiration as well as third level Bard spells, and we already talked about all of those things. So, okay, let's talk about what I think endgame gear should look like for this character. I'm not going to go into every single gear slot, but there are a few really important pieces that we want. First up, and I mean, spoiler warning, I probably should have said spoiler warning at the very beginning of this video because I kind of talk willy-nilly about some of the combats that we get into, right? Anyways, assuming that we're going into the House of Hope and trying to get the Orphic Hammer, I would grab those Gauntlets of Hill Giant Strength and the Amulet of Health. These are going to set both our Strength and our Constitutions to 23 respectively and keep us from having to quaff a Giant Strength Elixir every single day. We might be running low on this point if we've been drinking one daily since character level 9 or so, right? But being able to dump both Strength and Constitution in a respec, which you should do as soon as you get those items, would let us get our Charisma to 17, plus 1, plus 2, right? Dexterity to 16, and even our Wisdom to 14, plus a 23 Strength and a 23 Constitution. I mean, those stats taken together are going to be amazing for our saving throws, our ability checks, our initiative rolls, our perception checks, not to mention combat stuff. As for the other gear to prioritize, I would for sure pick up the Armor of Persistence that you get from Daemon in Act 3. It reduces all damage by 2 and permanently gives you the resistance spell. That gives us an extra D4 to our saving throws. We really should just, like, never fail another save again here. It also gives us permanent Blade Ward, which gives us resistance to all bludgeoning, piercing, and slashing damage, which is most of the damage that we take in-game. That's amazing. I think this is the best armor in the game, personally. Even if it only has a 20 AC instead of 21, like some of the other heavy armors you can get. I would also grab the Legacy of the Master's Gloves from Daemon. Is it Daemon or Daemon? Daemon. I'm going to say Daemon this time. As well, these gloves give us a plus 2 both to hit and to damage, and that's awesome. Wait, I thought you were using the Hill Giant Gloves. Yes, I would say we should, unless, again, we've got enough giant elixirs to last us. But also, like I said earlier, you absolutely could do a ranged melee combo build and be really great at both if you've got these gloves from Daemon and a giant strength elixir. Let's break it down. Assuming that we've got a 16 dexterity right now, if we equipped those gloves for a plus 2 to hit, and we had a really great bow that gave us a nice plus to hit as well, you could open up combat with a bunch of high damage ranged attacks, burning up your Bardic Inspirations on those, then move into melee once you're out of inspirations to start smiting what's left after your initial barrage. If we were hasted, with our flourishes, we could make 6 ranged attacks on one turn. I mean, 7 if we were still dual-wielding hand crossbows, but we're probably not at this point. But each of those are adding 10 from sharpshooter, plus a d8 from our flourish, right? Plus anything else that we have to add damage to our attacks. Then, once we're out of flourishes, on the next round, we move into melee and just mop up whatever survived our initial barrage with Smite and Great Weapon Master infused huge two-handed melee weapon attacks. You want to see what it looks like in-game? Here you go.
All right. Let's just make sure everything's looking good. Check out those saving throws. Gorgeous. Decent AC, nothing fancy. Hodgepodge gear. Didn't actually have the great two-hander on this particular run. I think Lazelle has it, but she got taken by Orin. So, anyways, let's see what we can do. Gonna have a little fight with Gortash here, and I have not taken out the Steel Watch, so this might be a dicey proposition, but we'll see. Go into turn-based mode, haste ourselves. And let's go start a conversation. I'll skip to avoid spoilers. I'm just here to fight. All right. Oh, what just happened? Oh, he blinded me. Even though I made my save. Interesting. All right. First thing I'm gonna do, it's actually go with the Vow of Enmity on Gortash there. Oh, I actually need a shield. Glad I have it. Everybody wants a piece. Okay, now, let's blow through some inspirations here. We'll do some slashing flourishes. First, you know what, let's take out this guy so he stops getting that shell. And yeah, let's do that a few more times. This time, we're just gonna focus Gore's Ash. Oh, I missed one. That's surprising. There we go. And now, I'm not playing on honor mode, so haste is giving me, like, two attacks. I'll not use a slashing flourish here. I'll just make one last attack. And yeah, that's it. That's my turn. Okay, here come all the rest of the Steel Watch. Missing me. Not sure why he jumped over there, but okay. Oh, I made a save. That's weird. Miss. Oh. What did I just take damage from? She must have tenacity or something. Stop blowing up the table. Alright. This is going well. I feel like these guys got two turns before me. That was weird. Alright, no longer blinded. Gortash can't hit me. Alright, time to switch to melee. Now, we can actually both smite and flourish on a single attack, so maybe since I have one left, I'll just kind of show you that really quick, go into your reactions, and then I can just tell it, right, to smite. You know what, I'm just gonna say smite no matter what if I hit, basically, right, with a level 5 spell, since I have one of those. And then, you know, for my attack, you just say I'm going to defensive flourish, let's say, get that AC up. Actually, you know what, we could slashing flourish and hit both of these guys. So yeah, let's go ahead and do that, and then it's gonna apply a smite as well. Very nice. Okay, now that was interesting. It looks like it actually just smote the first target that I hit, which is not what I wanted. So good to know. It looks like the first target hit only gets the smite, so be careful when you do that. But anyways, just to show you that you can do both. All right, let's try and burn down Gortash a little bit here. Kaboom. Let's do that again. Kaboom. Yeah, he's getting pretty low. If I can get a crit, I should be able to take him out this turn. Oh, or even if I don't. I do have my bonus action left. Like, I didn't get a crit, so I didn't get a bonus action attack, but I do have Pommel Strike, fortunately, and this can apply a smite as well. Again, let's see, I've got a third level smite left, so I just need to come in here and say, you know, yes, like, smite no matter what when I hit, and I can turn these off later, right? So then you pommel strike and it'll smite, and that's a dead Gortash. Whoop. Oh, I just got the achievement for that. Not activating any traps. Cool. Anyways, the rest of this fight, you know, I don't have a ton of resources left, but it honestly should not pose too much trouble. Because as you guys can see, like, nobody seems to be able to hit me. I'm making all my saving throws. And, you know, worst case scenario, I've got the shield spell available. Just kind of, oh, I actually did do a little bit of damage there, but I'm still hasted. I'm making my saves. You know, I'm getting low on smites. I'm probably going to hang on to them. Why don't we cleave a little bit here just to kind of help me start whittling some of these targets down. Oh, it used a smite because I forgot to turn that off. So be careful. Boop. There we go. But yeah, just kind of, oh, come on. Did kill somebody, so I get a bonus action, nice. Anyways, I won't play this out. As you guys can probably tell, I shouldn't have too much trouble finishing off this fight.
I mean, yeah, it is just a giggle-filled destroyer of worlds, and it's the most glorious thing I've ever seen in a video game. I mean, to have the versatility of being able to be really good at both ranged and melee damage, to have so much great survivability, as well as a cadre of spells to help you buff and be more mobile, it's just... it's all the things. Anyways... as for gear, other than what we've already discussed, honestly, just like find the gear you like best. It's not super dependent on things otherwise. Grab the best two-handed weapon that you can. For my money, it's the Baldurons Giant Slayer that you get off of Ansur, but there are other really great ones. The Displacement Cloak is probably my favorite cloak to give disadvantage to enemies on their attacks against us, which really helps keep us safe, but there are other solid choices. In general, for your other gear, I would say prioritize things that will buff our initiative roll, things that will buff our hit chance, and things that will buff our crit chance above everything else, or like things that will just let you get a guaranteed critical once in a while, right? After that, then yeah, look to increase your damage on a hit, right? And yeah, winning initiative, super important. Something I don't talk enough about in my builds, probably. I never take the alert feat, as good as it is. And part of the reason is because there are a lot of great items that you can get to bolster that initiative to help you go first, or at least very early in the fight, almost every time. One more important thing to note. If by late game you don't think you want to worry about making attacks from range, whether because you don't think you've got the gear or the elixirs to make it work quite right, or you just prefer to be in melee, or maybe you'd rather bump your charisma higher instead of take the sharpshooter feat, I would seriously consider going only to Bard 3 and then picking up two levels of fighter. I know, I can't believe I haven't talked about Fighter 2 this whole time. It's supposed to be a burst damage build. That's crazy. But yeah, Action Surge is really good, letting us get two full actions once per short rest, and that's really fantastic for burst damage purposes. I mean, coupled with haste, we're just making a billion attacks, right? For my money, I'd prefer to stick with Bard 5 here, as opposed to that fighter dip, because probably most importantly, we're going to get another feat, and we're going to get those Bard flourishes resetting on a short rest. We're also going to get more and better spell slots for smiting. And yeah, it's just so fun to be both a really solid ranged damage dealer and a monster of a melee damage dealer if we've got the gear and the elixirs for it. I mean, if you compare the two routes, right, going both ranged and melee like I'm suggesting we do, the overall damage over two rounds is going to consistently be higher every fight with Bard 5, since we'll have more and better flourishes every single short rest. But yeah, Action Surge is Action Surge and shouldn't be ignored. Anyways, that's kind of the build for the week. I don't really have any additional final thoughts to wrap up with. I feel like the gameplay footage kind of speaks for itself. The build is incredibly powerful, incredibly versatile, and yeah, I just started my fifth playthrough of the game, and I'm trying to solo it with this build. So I guess I'll let you know how it goes. But that's the build for the week. I hope you enjoyed it. I know I had a blast both creating it and playing it, so I hope that you will as well. I hope you guys know how much I love you. You are so awesome. Thank you for all that you do for me, for the channel. I hope that you have a fantastic day and a really great week. And if you don't, man, I hope you'll hang in there. I hope you will do good and be kind, and that I see you again very soon. But until then, take care.
You smell like moonlight and early morning rain. Pray tell a fool might surrender to your pain, or find a cure for your decay. You're at your best with an ache in your chest and that worn out old song that you play. Only Jesus and you long to teach us should know one be left to betray.
Oof. For my money, Alison Krauss might be the most beautiful female vocalist in the world. And yeah, I do love, you guys know that, but man, Alison Krauss's voice, it just gets me every time. Especially when she's singing some kind of melancholy, nostalgic ballad. Whew! Pulls at those heartstrings.
Ooh, welcome to Waterdeep.
Mm-hmm. Another gem from Obvious Mimic. Man, those guys put out great t-shirts. Let's make sure that this is all the way where... Oops. No. Out of batteries already. I have not had this battery in there for very long. Teleprompter remote. Out of batteries. Hold, please. Don't you love it when you record 5 minutes worth of content and then realize you forgot to hit the record button? I don't. I don't love that at all. Oh, my honey keeps texting me, and it is messing up my teleprompter. Forgot to put my phone in airplane mode. If you want a bigger challenge and don't ever want to take advantage of that, it feels cheesy to you, whatever, that's fine. At least you've got aid now to start smiting what left you're in. It hurts, mama.